Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday right here at GCNlive.com. My excitable co-host, Jim Fetzer, with whom I had a few words Tuesday, if you heard that. Oh, boy. He comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. And every once in a while, he invites me on to give me a hard time. Anyway, speaking of controversies and back and forth between people who are trying to help expose the truth of 9/11, that's what we're going to be talking about in the second hour today. There's a great website out there that's called WTCDemolition.com. And suddenly, all at once, just in the past week or two, I guess it was, or pretty recently, all of the people who post there suddenly got banned en masse from 911blogger.com, which is the best updated news and information site in the 9/11 truth world. And many other people recently have been getting banned from 9/11 Blogger for no apparent good reason, including myself, believe it or not. And the question is, what's going on there? Is there somebody gone crazy at 9/11 Blogger, or is there a method in the madness? To try to get at that and related issues, we will be talking with Sarah LaMadrid of WTCDemolition.com, and I believe it's RT of the same website. Two good, hardcore 9/11 truth activists. Sarah was involved in organizing David Griffin's extremely successful talk in Portland, I believe. And she has a master's degree in applied linguistics at Portland State. And I'll tell you something, an MA in linguistics is probably more than worth my PhD in literature. I had to take a few linguistics classes to get that PhD, and so I know what I'm talking about. Anyway, welcome, Sarah and RT. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, hi. So what's going on with this? This everybody getting suddenly banned at 9/11 Blogger. Is there going to be anybody left there next year?
Oh, sure there are, and I can probably give you a short list of exactly who those people are going to be.
Well, it's interesting. You know, they have apparently they're on user number 3,000, I guess, at this point, if you look at the numbers of registered users. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that we don't really see that many people ever post there. And, you know, if they're going to ban, I mean, I don't know if they've banned 2,000 people already, but it's just strange that they have so many users.
Yeah, well, I think the 9/11 Blogger has staked out some pretty important turf. They have done the best job of anybody at getting 9/11 truth-related news out in a timely manner, and that's something I've always really appreciated. But something seems to be going kind of wrong there and recently. And I was banned there back in, I think it was April, on this ridiculous pretext that I had John Lear on my show. Now, John Lear is by far the most highly qualified pilot in Pilots for 9/11 Truth and probably the most highly qualified pilot on Earth. He has a certificate in everything, every possible kind of aircraft out there. He's a former CIA agent who admitted and discussed on my show the fact that he had participated in Iran-Contra, flying drugs around. And very, very interesting guy. Now, I don't necessarily buy everything he says. I have no idea whether he's right or not. I have no idea whether he might even be feeding us a bunch of BS in some of the things he's saying. But the point is that this is an interesting guy to have on my show. He'd been on Rob Balsamo, the head of Pilots, show just a little before that. And then suddenly I get contacted and told, because I had this guy on my show, I'm no longer welcome at 9/11 Blogger. My account is frozen, and the many, many dozens of posts that exist that I've put up there that exist nowhere else, not backed up anywhere, are disappeared into a black hole. So I think that is very, very bizarre. And then next thing you know, my publisher, John from Progressive Press, is also banned. He's the only other Muslim that posts there regularly. And I'm starting to wonder, is there some kind of connection between people who are putting forth these kinds of pro-Muslim perspectives, which, you know, we Muslims tend to be pretty skeptical of the whole idea that there were any Muslim hijackers. In fact, I categorically am convinced that there were not, and this is a very important point to make. And people who make those points, like Elias Davidson, one of the very best 9/11 researchers and the child of Holocaust survivors, and others of that point of view, really have been downplayed or shunted aside in favor of those who emphasize this Pakistani and Saudi alleged connection to 9/11, as if they're desperately trying to keep blaming the Muslims, even though all the evidence shows that it was a Zionist imperialist inside job. So I don't know. That's my take on what might be going on there. I'm not happy with it. How about you?
Well, you know, I think you basically just summed up summed it all up, and we can probably just hang up now and let you carry on with the show.
Oh, I'm sure you can think of something to add.
You know, I mean, an important point is that there may very well be Muslims who are not out as Muslims still on the site, but, you know, in effect, it's the same thing. The Muslim voices have been silenced there if they've banned all the out Muslims.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much a Muslim issue. I mean, it really seems to be protecting the users at 9/11 Blogger who insist on really kind of being stuck in, you know, 2003, back when nobody was really sure where things were going to go, whether there was really enough evidence other than, you know, our eyes to convince people of controlled demolition. And they're pretending that we haven't already had, you know, 6 books by David Griffin, for example, which I think by far have been the most popular and the most, the best. And David Griffin has explicitly said that he doubts that there were any Arab hijackers. So, you know, I'm not sure why there are people who are still considered mainstream 9/11 truth people who can still say, for example, that controlled demolition is only a theory. And they're banning people who are taking issue with the users who say that.
Right.
Yeah, it's very much about protecting some bloggers. You know, some bloggers are, all bloggers are equal, but some bloggers are a lot more equal than others at 9/11 Blogger.
And what they'll say, too, is, you know, well, we haven't, there are plenty of people who talk about controlled demolition on 9/11 Blogger. You know, there still are. The problem is that when people, when other users post things that are just completely ridiculous at this point to be proposing, I mean, like that the Bush administration let it happen on purpose, you know, we're not allowed to call them out on that. If we do, we're called divisive and eventually kicked off the site if we persist in disagreeing with certain people.
So that's what happened to RT, that happened a little while ago, is he was too much a thorn in the side of one poster, and poof, he was banned. Eventually, my comments were moderated so that, I gave up commenting because none of my comments were published, and in particular, I couldn't respond even in the most civil fashion to at least one of the major bloggers there. And another blogger who's a user of our site, was recently told in public there to stop being this guy's gadfly. But if he keeps saying, if the blogger in question keeps getting to make the same arguments over and over again, and we are not allowed to rebut his arguments whenever he makes them without being considered gadflies and divisive, then there's an obvious attempt to steer the discourse there in a particular direction.
And I think the real issue here is whether you're responding to these bloggers by countering their argument or whether there's an ad hominem level to the attack, that is, attacking the person and their associations or something about the person rather than simply dealing with the argument that's put out. And I think Blogger has a bit of a history of allowing ad hominem attacks and preventing discussion of evidence. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Sarah LaMadrid and RT.
On the
help, I need somebody help, not just anybody help, you know I need someone help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured.
I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm here every Monday and Friday, same time, same channel. I'm going to be on the weekends, too, real soon, over on We the People Radio Network, that brand-new show, or at least brand-new time slot, will be happening from 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time every weekend beginning in August. The first weekend will include interviews with David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies himself, and also Paul Zaremka, who edited the great new 9/11 Truth paperback edition of this, probably the best scholarly work on 9/11. It's got a collection of articles by folks including Jay Kolar, who, along with Elias Davidson, is the preeminent scholar who has shown that there were no Arab hijackers on 9/11. And that is the issue we're talking about a little bit right now with Sarah LaMadrid and RT, who have been banned from 911blogger.com, the best up-to-the-minute 9/11 news information site until somebody comes up with a better one, because they take issue with people who continue to want to blame the Muslims one way or another. So I understand the pretext for banning your site was that somebody on your site linked some guy named David Cole. So what's that about?
Well, let me take this one, I guess. David Cole is well known as a, well, in certain circles, as one of the few Jewish Holocaust revisionists, and he refers to himself as a revisionist, or I should say he used to, because he was pressured into recanting, and that's a whole other can of worms there. He was essentially threatened. He was physically assaulted.
I read that recently. There's a book called Denying History. And, you know, what little I know about the Holocaust revisionist movement is mostly from that book. It's by Michael Shermer, who has a skeptic magazine, the least skeptical person in the world concerning 9/11, who has done hit pieces on 9/11 truth. But anyway, this book, Denying History, talks about this David Cole guy. And just even, you know, from this perspective, you feel sorry for this guy. He's like a young Jewish historian who suddenly he's getting beat up. He's getting brutally beat up by the JDL, the Jewish Defense League. Supposedly there was a contract put out on him, and then he obviously insincerely, or at least it looks that way to me, recanted and basically said, I totally believe everything you say, JDL. And then
he was a self-hater.
Yeah, he was a self-hating Jew.
So the point is that, you know, people naturally are concerned when they see something like Holocaust revisionism. And I have to say, it's not something that I ever thought to look at until I learned about 9/11. And if we're going to blame anybody here, let's blame Eric Hufschmidt. He had one of the earliest 9/11 sites, 9/11 videos. And the 9/11 material that Eric Hufschmidt put out, at least at the beginning, was actually fairly good.
Oh, it was excellent. Let's be honest. His book, Painful Questions, was probably the best book on 9/11 until Griffin started writing, and it's still a terrific source of high-quality photographic evidence for controlled demolition. It's a great book.
Absolutely.
It is a great book. I own that book. But I also think that Eric Hufschmidt is either a rabid Judeophobe or is doing, you know, plays one on TV, is doing a really good job of mimicking that.
I agree with that.
But, you know, I think it's really important for 9/11 truthers to look at somebody like David Cole. And I know that both RT, and I can look at him and relate to him personally, to, you know, relate to the kind of personality that comes through in descriptions of him. He's an iconoclast, he's irreverent, he doesn't take anything for granted, or, you know, this is in the days before his recantation. But it's important to separate the way that the Holocaust story operates from the content of the Holocaust story. And that's basically the extent of Holocaust revisionism at our site, is to understand the ways that when a myth is so thoroughly ingrained into the public consciousness that it cannot be debated anymore, that we may never find the truth. I mean, people may not want us to ever find the truth.
And a lot of this, I mean, there are so many parallels with the way that as 9/11 activists, we're often misrepresented, so that many of us are, you know, we encounter people in the street who say, oh, so you're saying no planes hit the towers? And obviously we're not saying that, but a lot of people are given the impression that that's what we're saying. So with Holocaust, what they call Holocaust denial, there's this misconception that people who question the Holocaust claim that, you know, either no Jews were killed or anything, or that they didn't suffer. I mean, everything that I've read, and I became interested
Did anybody actually say that? No Jews were killed and Jews didn't suffer? I mean, I've never...
No, that's kind of...
No, but when you hear Holocaust denial...
Oh, that's what you think of.
That's what a lot of people
assume. Oh, yeah. you're saying that that was all made up.
You're denying their suffering, and you're denying their death, and... I don't know anybody who does that with regard to all the different people who died during World War II.
But the point is that there is a disconnect between what is really being said by so-called revisionists and what people think that revisionists are all about. Now, yes, of course, some revisionists are racists, they're neo-Nazis, and somebody like David Cole made it very clear that he was absolutely not... of one mind with them on anything but the need to revise the official account of the Holocaust. Now, with somebody like David Cole, he's a bit of a problem because he makes it seem okay to people to look into this. I mean, I never looked at any revisionist materials until I saw David Cole's video linked to on Eric Hushman's site because I said, well, here's a Jewish guy. And he seems sincere in this video, very sincere, and he is sort of making it very clear. And until I watched that, and I didn't look into anything until I realized, hey, you don't have to be a neo-Nazi to look at this stuff. And I realized, well, you know, there is a big disconnect between what we think before we look into this, what it's all about, and what it turns out to be all about. And what it turns out to be all about is just that there are things that need to be freely questioned in order for us to have confidence in a historical record. And the example of 9/11 and the reason why, you know, it's important to understand the lessons of Holocaust revisionists is because these things are very similar to what's happening with 9/11. I mean, not yet, but in the future we might see a law saying, if you question the official account of 9/11, you will be accused of a hate crime.
Well, you can't work very long in any Wisconsin university if you question it right now. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking to Art East and Sarah LaMadrid. Stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
GCNlive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett, and in this hour I'm talking with Sarah LaMadrid and RT. They're both with WTCDemolition.com, an excellent website. We're talking about the bannings of people from 9/11 Blogger. The more and more people are being censored, silenced, and banned at that otherwise excellent website. And we're talking right now about the pretext for banning every single registered user of WTC Demolition, which is that there were some links from WTC Demolition to work by David Cole. And this, to me, guys, I find this whole notion of judging people based on a link completely bizarre. I mean, you don't necessarily link to something because you like it. You link to it because it's interesting. This whole notion of guilt by association and ad hominem attack, which are very closely related in the 9/11 truth movement, this is the real bane of the truth movement.
Kevin,
the people against us use endless ad hominems, and then some of the people within the movement use ad hominems as well.
Can I just clarify something? You know, when it's implied that the guilt by association thing, I mean, somehow our site, WTCDemolition.com, is a haven for, you know, a certain kind of person. I mean, this is simply nonsense. Not everybody who participates on our site wants to question the Holocaust. I mean, and it's not even that we want to question the Holocaust. Some of us bring it up because it has interesting parallels with 9/11 in terms of historical narrative, in terms of the importance of revising historical events when, you know, new information comes out, and also on the use of history to manipulate people. This is all related to 9/11. Now, not everybody on our site agrees that, you know, that there's anything about the Holocaust that needs to be revised. It's just that we don't ban people for posting things like David Cole. We certainly do not allow anybody to post things by neo-Nazis, or anything that is in any way hateful or that generalizes. So, you know, we absolutely do not tolerate racism, but we also want to encourage a spirit of free inquiry, and we're not finding that at 9/11 Blogger.
We're, in fact, a much more anti-racist site than 9/11 Blogger is. 9/11 Blogger allows a tremendous amount of implicit racism against Arabs, Persians, and Muslims. That's not exactly racism, but bigotry. And people hide there behind a kind of faux naivete about what racism really is and whether or not it's racist to have a double standard, so that it's fine for everyone to assume that there were Arab hijackers on the planes. In fact, if you don't, you're probably crazy and maybe a no-planer. But to mention, for example, an American Zionist property owner is treading on very thin ice. That's pretty much an immediate pass into anti-Semite accusations.
Are you referring to Larry Silverstein?
Well, we don't want to name names, right?
I don't want to name names. I name Larry's name all the time.
Of course,
Larry's name named at 9/11 Blogger.
He has been named at 9/11 Blogger, but
Certain users at one point told me that they would not consider him a suspect unless it was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was involved. Now, you don't have to have a shadow of a doubt to suspect somebody. The problem is that they're presuming his innocence until he's proven guilty. But with the alleged Arab Muslim hijackers, these people at 9/11 Blogger, and I won't name names at this point, are presuming the guilt before, you know, unless they're proven innocent. And, you know, to presume the guilt of the Arab Muslims with no evidence is racism.
Well, also, we have to point out that these guys, these patsies, the 9/11 patsies, were not Muslims by any stretch of the imagination. And so this whole narrative that blames Islam and Muslims for this is wrong, even if you don't question any other aspect of 9/11. These guys were hard-drinking, party-hardy cokeheads, chasing prostitutes and laugh dancers, partying in Las Vegas on the casino boats. I just was talking with Chris Emery at OKCBombing.net in the first part of the show, about the sightings of these patsies in OKC right before 9/11. Mohammed Atta paid apparently with a U.S. government credit card for drinks the Saturday night before 9/11. And then Marwan Ashahi, who's still named as one of the 9/11 hijackers, was back drinking in that bar on the following Saturday after 9/11. We have all sorts of evidence that Jay Kolar has talked about in Zaremka's book that many of these hijackers turned up alive after 9/11. We have Elias Davidson's work proving, I think, beyond any reasonable doubt that there were no Arabs or Muslims on those planes, because if there had been, the obvious, simple, straightforward evidence would have been produced immediately. So that shouldn't even be a question anymore, especially, and then if you have controlled demolition, you know that they're not going to let somebody take over a plane with box cutters and try to fly a plane into the building when you've got it rigged up for demolition. The odds that any of those planes would get taken over and hit their targets would be, you know, about 1 in 10,000 per plane. Multiply that by 4 planes and you get zero. So obviously there were no Arab Muslim suicide hijackers, and anybody who thinks that there were is either incredibly naive and ill-informed, or more likely brainwashed by unconscious racism.
So what is happening on a site like 9/11 Blogger then, when users who claim that controlled demolition is only a theory and that they still are not convinced. I mean, are these people really not convinced by all the evidence of the architects and engineers, Stephen Jones? By their own eyes, are they really not convinced by this evidence, or are they claiming not to be convinced? Because there's a big difference there.
That's a good point. You know, I favor a free and open debate of all of these issues. I'd like to have people on 9/11 Blogger and every other website with coming from every position. That's fine with me. I don't think anybody should be banned. My problem is with ad hominems. I know that when I was posting a 9/11 Blogger, every single time I posted anything, people would ignore what I posted and attack me personally. The leading person who did that was somebody who calls him or herself Colonel Jenny Sparks, a person who was called out by Webster Tarpley as an obvious disinformation agent. I understand that you, Sarah, actually know this person, and you actually think Webster is wrong. This person is not being paid for by COINTELPRO.
Yeah, I'm quite sure of that fact, and I want to say that...
Webster, got you again. You know, I gave Webster a hard time, actually, about name, you know, after he did that sort of half-joking but half-nasty thing. I told him he was wrong, but I with this Colonel Jenny person, though, I thought he might actually have had a point.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. I really believe that she's motivated by personal issues, and it's good to remind everyone that...
Is that a euphemism for complete insanity?
No, it's not complete insanity, but, you know, we've all been through stuff in our lives that have turned us into the people we are, and her case is actually kind of sad. That's not really an excuse for her behavior. I also want to say she definitely is a her, and it bothers me when people kind of play around with the gender thing there, because it does sound a little bit transphobic to me. But
well, it's just such a weird moniker.
Yeah, you know, it's a comic book character from a series of comic books called The Authority, and she's really in the comic books. And she's really into comic book characters. She's got more than one identity that's a comic book character.
Oh boy.
But I think the important thing is to consider is that a lot of people do not need any special inducement to act very badly. And I seem to have met kind of a disproportionate number of people like that in the 9/11 truth movement, which is something that, you know, really pains me and makes my life a lot more difficult. But somebody like her, it's given her way too much credit to say that she's COINTELPRO.
Okay, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, she's caused enough trouble. They ought to, you know, give her at least a couple of small checks. We'll be back in a moment.
I agree, yeah.
Kevin Barrett, I'm having a good conversation with Sarah LaMadrid and our key of WTCDemolition.com. We'll be back for one more segment. So stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on every Monday and Friday. Co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. Now, speaking of the kind of guilt by association smears that used to come from Colonel Jenny Sparks back in the days when I was allowed to post a 9/11 Blogger, you know, that music, that when you listen to Beatles music here on the Dynamic Duo Show, maybe it sort of builds this kind of emotional connection between me and Jim Fetzer, who's on the other days, because we have the same music. But, you know, just because you have the same emotional associations to Beatles music when you listen to me and you listen to Jim doesn't mean that I have the same opinions as Jim. I was getting attacked left and right for supposedly having something to do with Jim Fetzer's opinions. Well, I have all sorts of disagreements with Jim Fetzer. Go back and listen to the Tuesday show, a second hour, if you want to hear it hardcore. But, you know, he's an atheist. He's a science geek. He's in every way, he's totally different from me. I'm a humanities guy. I don't think the way he does. I don't agree with him on many, many things. I'm a libertarian. He's a liberal Democrat, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, if Timothy Leary can go on tour with G. Gordon Liddy and share a platform with him, I can certainly share a platform with Jim Fetzer, who's a lot of fun to hang out with, too. So, but this kind of guilt by association attack is really common among the troublemakers in the 9/11 truth movement, and it really is part of this problem of avoiding serious critical thinking and goodwill towards people, and instead going into this kind of mythical scapegoating kind of thought. The myth of 9/11 being, of course, the myth of the evil Muslim suicide hijackers, and with the issue of the Holocaust. I agree with you that the structure of the Holocaust narrative is mythical. It is a sacred narrative. The definition of myth in the academy is a sacred narrative, one that everybody who uses it believes is true, and if anybody questions it, they silence them as a heretic. That's what a myth is. It's a sacred narrative. There's no question that in that sense, which is the academic sense, the Holocaust is a myth. So, you know, Sarah and RT, how are we going to get back to a more nuanced and fact-based and really a more friendly and convivial kind of discussion within the 9/11 truth movement when we have all of this kind of nonsense going on?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I appreciate you bringing up that definition of myth, because I'm aware that I used that word earlier, and that is the sense in which I use it. And I don't know that it's really the sense that, you know, everyday use is. So when I say that it's a myth, I do mean that it's a narrative, and it's an extremely privileged narrative. I don't mean that it's a lie or that it's not true or that it's a hoax. So anyway, RT, go ahead.
Yeah, it's good to say that, because I got in trouble for using those words before.
Well, you know, the other thing is that when you say the Holocaust, I mean, that sort of lumps together. No, but it also lumps together a very large series of events, and when you're going to define those, I mean, what, you know, does removing one plank, for example, removing the allegation that that there was soap made out of Jews, does that then negate the Holocaust? I mean, you know, how much can you actually correct? Because for people who didn't know, there actually is no more the allegation that soap was made from Jews. I mean, it's acknowledged that this did not happen. And when those things are revised, you know, it's considered normal. You say, well, you know, there's really no evidence for this. It's okay. Nobody's trying to diminish the significance.
The official estimate of deaths at Auschwitz was taken down from something like 4-point-something million down to 1-point-something million, it was reduced by 3 million, according to Michael Shermer's book, Denying History. That didn't seem to completely overthrow the whole Holocaust story.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's the difference between the actual history, which nobody can deny certainly involved, you know, and just an unbelievable amount of suffering. I mean, just an incomprehensible amount on all sides, but definitely including Jews. And the idea that in order to make this a useful part of history, that a narrative has to be woven around it, a myth has to be created around it. And we can study that, and I think we should study that in terms of the Holocaust, because it teaches us about the uses, the way that this is done with in terms of 9/11. We have had a narrative created about 9/11 that we are discouraged, if not allowed, to question. And this is the exact same thing that happens with the Holocaust.
Except that so far you don't go to prison in certain European countries for questioning the Holocaust, I mean questioning 9/11. But it just surprises me that more people can't understand that's a very slippery slope.
Oh yeah, well this is one area that I've really seen differently after living in Morocco, learning Arabic, and watching and paying attention to the Arab media. A great many people in the Arab world, in fact, I would say the majority, really don't accept the standard Euro-American narrative of the Holocaust, either in its facts and especially its meaning. They are convinced, and I agree with them, that the equation Holocaust justifies Israel has been misused because, of course, the Holocaust doesn't justify Israel in any way, shape, or form. The story of the Holocaust is about what happened in Europe. Palestinians were not involved in any way. So how in the world can anybody try to claim that this allows Zionists to steal Palestinian land. It just doesn't make any sense, and yet that's how it's used. And I think that's the reason that people in the Arab and Muslim worlds have been so skeptical about that story.
Right, of course. And that's also the reason that a lot of us who started out as 9/11 truthers have eventually gotten around to examining aspects of the Holocaust narrative, because it is so completely bound up with the Zionist project, and because we have come to conclude that there's a lot of evidence that there was a Zionist agenda as part of a larger agenda behind 9/11, you know, including probably action by Israelis and pro-Zionist Americans. But even without that kind of direct participation, it was to forward goals that are specifically Zionist in nature.
Indeed, if you look at the Defending the Realm document drafted by all of those PNAC heavies,
right, it was
under
the
command of Netanyahu in 1995.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a precursor to the Rebuilding America's Defenses memo that called for a new Pearl Harbor. And Netanyahu was a weekly telephone buddy with Larry Silverstein, who has a very obvious prima facie case of arson for profit, among other things.
Of course.
I mean, right. how can people not be putting two and two together here? And also the question of motive is so important. Arabs and Muslims trying to get Zionists and imperialists out of their countries have no motive whatsoever to launch a spectacular terrorist attack in the U.S., any more than the Vietnamese would have had to blow up skyscrapers in the U.S. during the Vietnam War.
Right,
that would simply increase the American people's resolve to continue with the Zionist and imperial project. And so it's obviously the motive is all on the other side. It's with the Zionists and the imperialists. And that's something that just hasn't ever been recognized, even in the 9/11 truth movement.
Well, and the other thing is the whole idea that the day of 9/11, for some reason, it was decided that it would be a good idea to put on American television images of Palestinians celebrating. You know, they didn't put images of people celebrating in other countries. They selected, Palestinian people who, and there doesn't seem to be any consensus as to, whether these were genuine celebrations, whether they were pre-recorded.
I believe one of them was a pre-recorded martyr's funeral, but in any case, I know people who were in Palestine then, and nobody was celebrating. They said everybody was inside glued to their TV sets.
And I can imagine that's probably the case, but I have a hard time, I can't prove that. But what I would say to people is that even if there were some celebrations, why bother? I mean, why put it on TV? Why sort of, aggravate the situation?
Well, that's a Dr. Goebbels move. That's why they put it on TV. They were trying to whip up a 100 years war against Islam and Muslims. And that war seems to be bogging down now. Thank God for that. All right, well, we've come to the end of a very interesting hour. Thank you very much, Sarah LaMadrid and RT of WTCDemolition.com.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
Yeah, I hope I'll join your website and post there.
Oh, that'd be great.
I can't post a blogger anymore.
Yeah.
Please welcome.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, this is Kevin Barrett signing off here on Dynamic Duo. Come on back next week. We'll have another great show for you. Some interesting guests coming up include Adam Eidinger of VoteHemp.org on Monday. So talk to you then.